Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, some news from the election in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania can now require voters to put a date on mail-in ballots, a U.S. appeals court has ruled. The ruling means that tens of thousands of mail ballots may be disqualified in this year's elections, and a new U.S. deadline for certifying election results is adding pressure to Pennsylvania officials. Another flurry of recount petitions could complicate efforts to deliver results by December 11th. We'll check in with Vote Beat reporter Carter Walker. Plus, Maggie Fitzpatrick is here from the Sullivan County Democrat, moving toward health. We've got a report from culture reporter Valerie Manzi, and it's our spring fun drive. A challenge coming up after the news from NPR, plus a story about how a new volunteer came to Radio Catskill.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Israel says it has significantly stepped up inspections of trucks bringing in humanitarian aid to Gaza. The number of trucks allowed in each day has almost doubled in the past 2 days. This is after the U.S. warned Israel it must do more to alleviate the suffering of Palestinian civilians in Gaza. NPR's Carrie Kahn has more.
According to Israeli authorities, in the past 2 days, 741 humanitarian aid trucks crossed into Gaza, one of the highest numbers since the start of the war. United Nations officials and Gaza authorities, however, say that is still not enough to meet the need for food, fuel, and medical supplies. Before the war, on average, more than 500 trucks crossed into Gaza. In a social media post, Kogat, the Israeli agency overseeing Palestinian territories, said the UN was able to deliver only one-third of the new aid. The UN's humanitarian coordinator has called on Israel to ensure that aid can be safely delivered, especially to northern Gaza, where officials say famine is imminent. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Maryland representatives are asking Congress for help with the Baltimore Bridge collapse. They warn it will take hundreds of millions of dollars to clear the bridge debris, and they need to reopen the main channel for ships to get to the Port of Baltimore. U.S. Coast Guard Commander Bill McKinstry says working conditions at the site are treacherous.
The difficulty that is surrounding that is immense because of the conditions of the water, the divers. You might have a foot of visibility to be able to see.
Maryland Governor Wes Moore is signing legislation this morning. It aims to help Baltimore port workers and businesses financially affected by the disaster. The Biden administration has released new rules covering more than 200 chemical plants in the U.S. The Environmental Protection Agency says the plants must limit certain toxic pollutants that they release into the air. The rule will affect many communities with majority Black and Latino residents in the South. Stocks opened mixed this morning as Norfolk Southern agreed to settle a lawsuit over last year's train derailment in eastern Ohio. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 50 points in early trading.
Norfolk Southern's agreed to pay $600 million to settle claims from people living within 20 miles of where the train left the track in East Palestine, Ohio. The railroad has already paid more than $1 billion towards the cleanup and promised to set up a fund for residents' long-term health care needs. Tesla's also settled a lawsuit brought by the family of a man who was killed when his car crashed into a highway barrier. The man was using Tesla's autopilot feature. Terms of that settlement were not disclosed. Gasoline prices continue to climb ahead of tomorrow's inflation report. AAA finds the average price of regular gas is just over $3.60 a gallon, up about 20 cents from a month ago, and roughly the same as this time last year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 50 points. This is NPR. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron visited presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump yesterday in Florida. He's urging Trump to press Republicans to approve fresh aid for Ukraine. The British government says it is customary for British officials to meet opposition leaders in election years. Cameron is meeting Secretary of State Antony Blinken today. Western environmentalists are suing the federal government over its refusal to relist wolves in the Northern Rockies under the Endangered Species Act. NPR's Kirk Siegler reports the federal civil case involves wolf populations only in Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho.
This lawsuit follows the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's recent determination that strict protections are no longer needed for wolves in the Northern Rockies. It also follows moves by the federal government to remove all Endangered Species Act protections for wolves nationwide. But a court rejected that, and in this latest civil lawsuit, environmental groups claim that the three states' management plans for the wolves here are inadequate. As of 2022, it was estimated that there were about 900 to 1,000 wolves in each of the states. In Idaho, game managers recently authorized the shooting of wolves from helicopters, a practice that largely ended in the 1990s after heated controversy. Kirk Sigler, NPR News, Boise.
Arizona's Supreme Court is set to issue a closely watched abortion ruling today. The state court's opinion will determine whether the procedure can remain legal, or the Arizona Supreme Court could ban all abortions except to save the life of the mother. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at LodestarFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll get to some news about the election in Pennsylvania with VoteBeat reporter Carter Walker in just a minute. But first, glad to say, live in studio, we've got our friend from the Forestburg Playhouse, Franklin Trapp, is here. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in. It's our spring fun drive, and we're talking to folks from around the community. And you're coming in to tell us about the new season, but also a special challenge for our listeners, I understand.
That's right. The Forestburg Playhouse is so happy to be a collaborator with Radio Catskill that we are donating $250 to your fun drive, and we challenge you to do the same or better.
Yes.
Do it now.
Call 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. The way it works with the challenge, Franklin will not give us that $250 until we make the $250.
That's
and that
right.
becomes $500 and goes into the overall tally here. We're at 20% of our goal, just over $11,000 raised.
Wow.
We're trying to get to $12,000 by this afternoon if we can. And with this, that would be $500. We'd be well on our way getting closer to that micro goal for the day, and
great.
Then even bigger momentum toward our overall goal of $55,000. Franklin, the Forestburg Playhouse, you guys have announced your new season. I saw that come out, and I was like, this is really exciting. Tell folks what you've got coming up, because it's a great lineup of stuff.
Oh, my goodness. We're so excited. This is going to be our 78th season at the Forestburg Playhouse, and we've got an incredible lineup for our main stage season, which opens up in mid-June. We're going to be presenting Forbidden Broadway's Greatest Hits, which is just one of the best spoofs comedies of all time. It makes fun of every Broadway show. Incredible performers doing impressions and comedy. It's just great. We're excited.
I have to say, I've seen it in the city, and you know, for folks who love theater and to see this spoof of that, it's such a fun night. You know, the inside jokes and just how they send it all up, and everybody has a great time.
Yeah, and we're actually really, really excited because the director of this production, his name is Philip George, and he is the original director of Forbidden Broadway.
Oh, cool!
From the Off-Broadway productions. So that's going to be fun. And then we have a really beautiful Pulitzer Prize winning drama called How I Learned to Drive. Which is, you know, a more serious topic, but just a beautiful piece of theater that we're really excited to present. And then we get into our musical blockbusters of the summer. We're starting it off with Jimmy Buffett's Escape to Margaritaville. So get ready for the frozen drinks, the beach balls.
Parrot heads.
Although you're going to have to take your parrot hats off in the theater, please. But I think that's going to be just a wild time. And that's July 2nd through the 14th. And then it's time to go to the prom. We're hitting that big Broadway musical up. It's The Prom, featuring some incredible performers, a great story of inclusivity, and just great comedy. And also, we're going to be featuring a really special group of performers in that show. We call them the Promsemble. And this is going to be local high schoolers from around the county and surrounding counties that'll be performing in the ensemble of the show.
Oh, that's great.
That's really exciting. Followed by Rock of Ages, beautiful, the Carole King musical, which is super exciting. And then we're going to round out the season with a really wild play called Hand to God, And for the kids, it's Willy Wonka all summer long. So it's awesome. A big summer coming up.
Very cool. And, you know, it's such a great mix that you always provide. I think this season especially has this great mix of the musicals, the drama, something for family. It hits every part of it. And as you mentioned, incorporates local kids in the community, local theater buffs that are out there to be able to perform. You always do that. But, you know, are you planning this thing just year round? Like when the season ends, are you already on to the next season? Are you thinking about next season now? How does that work for you?
We really start thinking about the next season pretty much once the summer season starts. So, I mean, right now I don't think I have the bandwidth to plan for next year, but come July, we're going to start thinking about that lineup for 2025 and so that we can launch it in October.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 365 day process here at the Playhouse. So.
The Forsberg Playhouse, always bringing a great theater to the area, and it has been doing so for 78 years. Amazing. And it's the longest running
summer theater in New York.
Amazing. Again, more information at fbplayhouse.org. And Franklin and Forsberg Playhouse have brought us this $250 challenge during our spring fun drive. Call us now at 845-482-4141 or go online wjffradio.org and help us meet that challenge. Thank you so much for being here with that challenge, of course, but also for all you do for the theater community in the area. It's such a great place. If folks haven't been, you have to go. It's such a magical place to go to, especially during the summer season.
Well, we're excited, and thank you for what you do. And everybody, write your checks. Go online. Donate today to Radio Catskill. Today's the day.
Thank you so much. Franklin Trapp from Forsberg Playhouse. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to pivot now to some news out of Pennsylvania and the elections. The third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled recently that ballot return envelopes in Pennsylvania need to be dated to be counted, which could mean that tens of thousands of ballots are rejected. And also there's a new U.S. deadline for certifying election results that adds pressure to Pennsylvania officials, which could impact and complicate the results efforts at the end of the year. Here with more about that is VoteBeat reporter Carter Walker. VoteBeat is the nonpartisan newsroom with local reporting on elections and voting in the Keystone State. Carter, good morning.
Morning, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. A couple of big stories impacting the election in Pennsylvania. Let's talk first about that new ruling from the U.S. Appeals Court that means tens of thousands of mail ballots could be disqualified in this year's election. What's going on there?
Yeah, so this is the continuation of a long-running battle here in Pennsylvania about whether the envelopes that voters return their mail ballots in need to have a handwritten date on the back to be counted. Pennsylvania state law says that they do, but that requirement has been facing challenges over the years about whether or not it violates a provision in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And just 2 weeks ago, the Third Circuit, like you said, ruled that it does not violate that provision, which means that ballots will need to have that handwritten date on them to be counted.
Now, are the plaintiffs appealing this to the Supreme Court?
Well, that's yet to be seen. The plaintiffs, which are the NAACP and a couple of other voting rights groups here in Pennsylvania, which are being represented by the ACLU, they have the option to either appeal to a full panel of the Third Circuit, because this decision was just from a three-judge panel, or they could appeal up to the Supreme Court. Both come with risks, and, you know, there's a calculation there, especially if you appeal to the Supreme Court. You know, you have to think about the fact that this might set precedent nationwide, but they have yet to make a decision on whether or not they're going to go with either route.
And so we're waiting to see what happens there. So meanwhile, what's going to happen in the Third Circuit? Does that mean that this is going to impact this year's election?
For at least the primary, the rule that is going to be in place is that you have to date your mail ballot return envelope. And that needs to be a handwritten date on the declaration spot where you're signing that you are, in fact, registered and eligible to vote. And the date needs to be the guidance from the Department of State is that it's today's date. So the date that you're signing and returning the ballot, it needs to be that date on the envelope, not your birth date, not the date that you registered to vote or anything else. Today's date.
All right. So the primary in Pennsylvania coming up on April 23rd, Lots to decide there. There could be some other action in the courts. But what are folks saying who are reacting to this ruling from the Third Circuit?
Well, Republican groups that were the ones acting as the defendants in this lawsuit, trying to keep the date requirement in place, are obviously celebrating it as a victory. The Senate Republicans put out a statement. They weren't a party to the case, but they put out a statement celebrating it as a way to maintain the integrity of the elections. Obviously, there are other groups that are upset because they feel that the dating requirement doesn't have any bearing on the envelope. And I'll note that as part of the case, election administrators unanimously said, and the parties agreed to, the fact that the date itself doesn't help election administrators determine that the ballot was received before the election takes place, because that's all handled electronically. So while there are some Republicans that are happy about the ruling, other groups think it's going to create a barrier to voters that is just unnecessary.
Right. Some are saying it could be folks losing their vote over a meaningless paperwork error. That's what Mike Lee, the executive director of the ACU of Pennsylvania, said in a statement after that decision. They were one of the plaintiffs in the case. Again, this is a part of a provision in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Can you talk a little bit more about this materiality provision?
Yeah. So the materiality provision, it says that a voter can't be denied the right to register to vote because of something that is immaterial to their eligibility. And this was something that was passed to get rid of the voter literacy test of the Jim Crow era, where if a voter couldn't read, they weren't allowed to vote, which was targeting African-American voters as a way to suppress their vote. The argument in this case came down to a portion of that line that says, or other acts requisite, a portion of that statute that says, or other acts requisite to voting. The defendants, Republican intervener defendants in the case, argued that this provision, the materiality provision, is solely restricted to the point in time at which a voter is registering to vote. And because this mail ballot comes after they've already registered and been determined to be eligible, then the materiality provision doesn't apply. But the ACLU and the NAACP argued that because the act says, or other acts requisite to voting, and this returning this ballot and signing and dating the envelope is required for the ballot to be cast, they said that's why the materiality provision applied. At one point in time, a different panel of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with that reasoning. This three-judge panel didn't agree with that reasoning. So they said, okay, no, the materiality provision does not apply.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Carter Walker, reporter for VoteBeat Pennsylvania, the nonpartisan newsroom with local reporting on elections and voting in Pennsylvania. And we're talking about this ruling from the U.S. Appeals Court saying that Pennsylvania can require voters to put a date on their mail-in ballots. So I guess that what the ruling said basically was that the state's role stops at the door of the voting place.
That the materiality provision's role stops after the voter has been registered. They say that was this court's opinion, that that's where the materiality provision ends. And, their argument was basically we need to allow the states some ability to create rules around their ballots and around their voting processes. And we have to draw a line somewhere. The reasoning kind of, the hypothetical that they put forward there was, okay, well, if we have a voter that, perhaps someone goes out and says, hey, we want you to vote a certain way, and we have a person working in the elections office, so put a stray mark in the top right corner of your secrecy envelope, and then we'll know that you returned your ballot and voted, then we'll pay you. Obviously, we wouldn't want that going on. So the argument was, okay, well, can their state create restrictions that you can't have markings on your secrecy envelope, even though that doesn't really relate to your eligibility to register to vote? And the court felt that states need to have the leeway to make some kind of rules like that.
You mentioned this is a continuation of a case that's been going on. How did we get here?
Well, for this case specifically, it was brought after the 2022 election. A couple voters, as in every election since this law passed in 2019, had their ballots rejected because they didn't have the date on them. They sued along with the NAACP and those groups I spoke about, but goes back much further than that. The reason that case was brought in 2022 was because a case earlier that summer had been that ruled the opposite way, also from the Third Circuit, had been thrown out by the U.S. Supreme Court because one of the candidates dropped their objection to the race that was being litigated. And so the Supreme Court said, okay, well, now this issue is moot. After that, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court ruled, okay, the law says that it needs a date, so it needs a date. They're a state court, so they didn't rule on federal issues like the Civil Rights Act. And then these litigants brought the case, which was just decided 2 weeks ago. But as you can hear there, I'm talking about a history that goes back 3 or 4 years at least. And, you know, we've had different courts rule different ways. And some elections, the ballots have been counted when they don't have a date because that's the case law that was in place at that point in time. And other elections, they haven't been counted because that's the case law. So we've really been going back and forth on this for a long, long while.
Yeah, in your reporting, you state that roughly 8,000 ballots were rejected during the 2022 midterm election for lacking that proper date or signature on the outer return envelope. That's according to the Pennsylvania Department of State. But VoteBeat and Spotlight PA did an analysis of data from three counties in 2022. What did you find?
Yeah, so in 2022, some counties, in an effort to prevent these ballots from being rejected, they will notify voters that, hey, you don't have a date or a signature. Please come down to the elections office and put one of those on this envelope so that we can count it. So what we did was we took that data of who those voters were and analyzed where they live. And what we did with that, we used some census data to find that the voters who were having their ballots rejected were more likely to come from lower income, higher minority population neighborhoods, meaning that's the folks that it's most likely impacting. And what is also well known is that these voters tend to be much older, not just because mail voting is used by older voters in general, but the voters who were having their ballots rejected were older on average than even the average mail voter. So it tends to affect lower income, higher minority populations, and older voters when these ballots are rejected.
And we're talking to Carter Walker from VoteBeat Pennsylvania about some news impacting the election in Pennsylvania. There's another story we want to get to. Carter, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that. That's that new U.S. deadline for certifying election results that's going to add some pressure to Pennsylvania officials to certify those results and deliver them on time. We'll have more with Carter Walker from VoteBeat PA right after this break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, I'm NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. I report on the shakeups, challenges, and trends in the news industry, including here at NPR, because sometimes the media is the story. I also cover the relationships between the press and politicians and how news outlets are fighting disinformation. All of this is even more relevant in an election year. Please help NPR keep trustworthy information coming your way by making a donation to this station today. And thanks.
Donate now during our spring fund drive at WJFFradio.org.
It's our Spring Fund Drive. Donate at WJFFradio.org or go to 845-482-4141. That's the phone. Call us, 845-482-4141. And make a donation now, especially because we have a challenge from our friends at the Forestburg Playhouse, a $250 challenge we need to meet before 11 o'clock. So call us at 845-482-4141 and help us meet that challenge. You just heard why it's so important during an election year to support public radio because of all the disinformation and news that's out there. Right now, we're talking about the news about about the election in Pennsylvania, a pivotal key swing state. And we're talking to Carter Walker from Vote Beat Pennsylvania. They're the nonpartisan newsroom with local reporting on elections and voting. Specifically, they're in Pennsylvania, Carter's beat. We were just talking to Carter about that U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling and how it impacts mail-in ballots. But there's now another U.S. deadline for certifying election results that's adding pressure to Pennsylvania officials to complicate delivering those efforts to deliver the results by December 11th. Carter, let's remind folks about after the 2022 election, what happened with trying to certify the results in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so after the 2022 election, we saw a lot of court cases going on here in Pennsylvania and many other states. We saw groups organize alternate or fake slates of electors trying to throw the state's votes to Donald Trump. And then we saw, you know, obviously challenges being brought up on January 6th in Congress and then with folks storming the congressional building. And so after that election, the Congress decided to pass a new law that would try and shore up some of those post-election processes to try and avoid that chaos again.
And so now what's this new deadline? It's moving it back. Is that right?
Yeah. So there is a new deadline as part of that. And what it is that by December 11th, all states need to have their slate of presidential election electors certified. So that, you know, there's no question of who the electors are and that everything gets to Congress in a timely fashion, and that we know who our electors are before they meet 6 days later to certify. This used to be referred to as the safe harbor deadline, but it was kind of a loose, date just by which everyone agreed, okay, well, you know, if we get it done by this date, things will be fine, but it wasn't really a firm deadline in law with a process for what happens if you don't make that deadline. But now it is. It's December 11th this year. And like you said, Pennsylvania might have some challenges meeting that.
And so this new federal deadline came out of the Electoral Count Reform Act of 2022. That was a law Congress passed and President Joe Biden signed. And that was a way to prevent the kind of chaos that we've talking about after the 2020 election. So what does this Electoral Count Reform Act of 2022 require? And then what does the state law allow?
Right. So like I said, it requires that the governor and the secretary of state certify our slate of presidential electors. You know, these are the folks in Pennsylvania, there are 19, who cast ballots based on how our voters have cast, and they're part of the Electoral College. And now every state needs to say who those electors are going to be by December 11th, which is 6 days before they meet to actually do their voting on December 17th. And the issue that arises with Pennsylvania state law is that we have a deadline by which our counties need to certify the election, because remember, counties are really who run and certify the election here in Pennsylvania. But that deadline that we have in state law isn't very firm, and there aren't clear processes for what happens if a county misses it, like there are with the Electoral Count Reform Act, if we miss that December 11th deadline. And as we've seen in recent years, we have pushed well beyond that November 25th date in state law. And if we do it again this year, that could cause problems to meeting the December 11th federal deadline.
Now, do we think the courts might step in? We're always talking about courts and appeals and lawsuits.
Yeah, so the main challenge here would be in 2022, we started to see an uptick in recount petitions. In Pennsylvania, it's fairly easy for a person that takes three voters and $50 in a precinct to file a request for a recount. And since it's fairly easy to do, we saw over 100 of them in 2022, which delayed our certification until December 22nd. The reason is because Pennsylvania state law says if a county's facing these recount petitions, they don't have to certify by that November 25th deadline. Courts may step in here if that happens again this year in two ways. The state courts could step in and say, okay, a a county is facing these recount petitions, but the Department of State has a deadline, existential deadline of December 11th. So the Department of State might ask the state courts to compel the counties to certify their election, even if some of these recount petitions are pending through what's called a mandamus action, which is an official court order to force a government body or a government official to perform an action. And the State Department might do that so that they can meet their December 11th deadline. And the other scenario is if those recount petitions push the Department of State past their December 11th deadline, the winning candidate could also file an action against the Department of State to force the Department of State to perform its duty and certify the election. Neither of those obviously are desirable outcomes, because I don't think people would appreciate having to have the court step in to take these actions. They'd rather just see it play out naturally the way it's supposed to, is my impression, I think, of what most people would want to see. But there might come a point, if we're pushing up to or going past these deadlines, where the state courts would have to get involved.
Yeah, and Pennsylvania still has on the books, I guess, the same rule since they've had since 1927, basically, that what it means to file a recount petition. It's pretty easy to file. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, very easy to file. Like I said, only three voters in a precinct need to file, need to say that they believe that there was some fraud or error in that precinct's election to request that it be recounted, and they have to put up a $50 bond with that. And for context, in 1927, when that was first written, $50 was the equivalent of almost $900. Now, after the 2022 election, when there were a lot of these recount petitions, courts had some varying opinions on whether or not, if they didn't have specific allegations of fraud in the petition, did they need to be filed in every precinct where the election took place, which for a presidential election would mean all 9,000 precincts across Pennsylvania. And they eventually determined that if they don't have that allegation of fraud, that's something specific, then they do need to go into every precinct. But I don't think it's really clear on what they might mean by specific allegation of fraud. Like, how specific do we have to get? And could maybe some of the disinformation that we saw in 2020 around our elections, could folks use that as the basis and say, okay, well, here's my specificity claim. There have been a few efforts to reform that law over the past couple of years. They haven't been successful. Folks have wanted to increase the filing fee, obviously, to make it more reflective of what it was at the time, and shore up the requirement that they need to have specific allegations of fraud or error to be valid. But again, those haven't been successful, and it would seem unlikely that a big change to our election code is going to come in the midst of a presidential election.
Oh, Pennsylvania. Carter Walker, who's keeping an eye on everything that's going on during the election in Pennsylvania for Vote Beat Pennsylvania. Carter, we're going to be talking to you a lot more this year. Thank you for keeping an eye on everything and for explaining what's going on in this crucial swing state.
Happy to do it. Thanks again.
All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, an update on that challenge. Also, we'll talk to Maggie Fitzpatrick from the Sullivan County Democrat with her column Moving Toward Health, and we'll talk to one of our new volunteers about how he came to discover public radio in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania right after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Imagine one day your NPR station just disappeared. All the news and shows and conversations that you love, gone. Well, we have been thinking about some backup plans. Maybe Corver Coleman could read AI-generated poetry?
Potato clouds drift in a spud-filled sea in this absurd world where I roam free.
Or maybe Steve Inskeep could do some ASMR?
I'm here to guide you through a calming journey into the heart of nature.
Or Scott Simon could read the dictionary.
Oh, here's a good one. Gun-goozler. That's somebody who enjoys watching activity on canals. Ha! I'm a gun-goozler.
Actually, I would listen to Scott Simon reading the dictionary. But you rely on public radio for so much more every day. So please, help us make sure those backup plans stay on the shelf. You can support this station today.
Here's how to donate.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Or call 845-482-4141. And you can help us with the challenge that was issued just a little while ago from our friend at the Forestburg Playhouse. Franklin Trapp was here and issued a $250 challenge. And happy to report we heard from Anonymous in New York City. And so now we just have about $200 to go on that. So help us out, 845-482-4141, or go to WJFFradio.org. During the fun drive, we're always joined by people that come in regularly and new people as well. And then we kind of throw them together. It's like the Grammys when they do those mix-up like things. Right now, we've got Maggie Fitzpatrick from the Sullivan County Democrat who joins us every Tuesday with her Moving Toward Health column. Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning.
And I think you met a new friend here, Ted Neuter, who's one of our new volunteers. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Tim.
Thanks for coming in. Ted, we had you come in because we wanted to, you know, share with people as part of this fun drive how folks came to discover the station and what they value about public radio. And we wanted to hear your story. How did you discover Radio
Catskill? It's kind of the cliche story, to be honest. You know, I was up here, moved up here from the city in July, and driving around, lost the cell signal on my AT&T, went right to SOS, and of course, whatever... you know, digital media I was playing at the time died out. And what do you do next? You scan the channels. And I landed on you guys, and I believe it was Catskill.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I love the name, and I was immediately intrigued. And, I just, kind of fell in love with the programming, started listening at night to the music. You know, I love the music. Started listening more and more. And then I met Rosie at an author event hosted by Aaron from One Grand Books. Shout out to his show, Shelf Life.
Yep.
Great show.
Sundays at noon.
I could listen to him read a phone book.
he's great.
And I just dropped an email saying, you know, I kind of have a little small history in the business and the industry, and I'd be honored to come up and check it out. And then you guys had me in, and then immediately put me to work doing things, looking at things.
We're like, grab him.
And yeah. So, no, it's just been wonderful, and I'm really happy to be here.
You know, no one can resist the power of Rosie Starr. I just want to point that out. Do you want to talk a little bit about your brief history in that area of radio?
I went to school for television radio production, and I was a part of the team. I worked for Howard Stern for 10 years.
Who?
The king of all media, and the Google alert will let them know that this is happening. So, I kind of was thrown in to the fire per se, you know, in the radio world, and so fell in love with it immediately. Grew up with radio, and then to go and work for one of the biggest broadcasters in the world was just a dream come true. And I worked there for a decade, and then I left the city and came up here and was so happy to be in a radio studio again with you guys.
We're glad you're here. We're glad you discovered us. If you've discovered Radio Catskill recently, or you've been listening for a long time, now is the time to support us during our Spring Fun Drive, 845-482-4141, or go to WJFFradio.org. We have that $250 challenge out there from Franklin Trapp and the Forestburg Playhouse, just about $200 to go. We'd like to get that in the next 20 minutes. So do it now, 845-482-4141. Or WJFFradio.org. Ted, you want to hang around and hear what Maggie has to say? She's helping us move toward health. I haven't moved that far, I will be honest.
Yes,
she's here every week and tells me. But she tells everybody. You have a weekly column with the Sullivan County Democrat. Today, we're talking about returning to full strength. What do you mean? I think the first line talks about injury. Was there an injury that inspired this?
There was.
What
you
happened?
Always ask about the inspiration, and you know there always is one.
What happened with the injury? What happened?
Well, I was playing soccer a couple weeks ago. I play in a co-ed league, and I went to go defend a shot, and this guy went to go, you know, shoot the ball in goal, and it hit my foot, and he hit the ball so hard. Let me tell you, I was like, that was pretty impressive, but my foot did not think it was very impressive. And the impact of the ball caused me to have an ankle sprain. And so I went down and I was like, I think I'm good. And then I went to get up and I was like, nope, definitely not
so good.
You know, one of those situations. But that has kind of left me on the injury report for the last couple of weeks, you know?
Oh,
so
yeah,
I was going through the process of healing that. And I was like, you know, this is going to be what I'm going to write about for this week.
So what is, I mean, you, an ankle injury, not a lot you can do, I guess, right? Just to let it heal, right? So what is the message you're trying to inspire us with here?
Yeah, the message is, a lot of times we end up with, this is like a non-life-threatening injury, right? A musculoskeletal injury. A lot of people end up with them at some point in life when we are exercise. When exercise is a part of our life or playing sports, we end up injured at some point, usually, right? And sometimes we let fear take us out of that movement for a lot longer than we need to. And as that injury is going on, you know, we're healing it and we're getting to a point where we're saying, oh, it feels pretty good again, right? It feels pretty good. But now I'm scared to get back into this movement because I don't want to re-hurt myself. But that point is actually when we need to start pushing ourselves again to get back to full strength. Otherwise, we are setting ourselves up to be re-injured, right? So it's this line we have to walk delicately, and we want to make sure we don't let that fear creep in too much.
So there's an acronym that you have for folks to follow when they're kind of dealing with something like this. RICE.
Yeah.
The grain.
Very common. I'm sure most people have probably heard of it.
I don't think I've heard of it. Have you heard of
really?
It?
Rest. Ice.
Uh-huh.
Chocolate?
Cabernet?
Chocolate? Correct. No, compression.
Okay, sure.
Compression and elevation. Right.
Got it.
So when something is injured musculoskeletally, that's basically like the best way you can help the healing process, right? So if I hurt my ankle, that means I need to try to stay off it as much as possible. So I'm on the couch, you know, foot up on a pillow wrapped with ice on it. And that's very challenging to do. It's very challenging to do, especially when your injuries and, you know, your legs and then that inhibits walking. But the more you can actually let your body heal in the beginning, the faster you're going to be able to get back to activity, right? And so the faster we can get back to activity, then the less fear is going to creep in that keeps us sidelined for longer, right? So we want to make sure we really commit to healing. And then really commit to getting back into what it is that we're trying to do.
I don't think that you're someone who's normally that afraid, though, but you're bringing this message out to some folks who might be.
Yeah, it's because I see it a lot.
Yeah.
It's because I see it a lot, especially as, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, let me get back out there immediately, right? And then as you get older, the fear starts to become bigger and bigger. But that's when it actually becomes more and more important that you don't let it stop you.
All right. How long are you going to be on the bench, do we think?
Oh, I already am playing basketball again. See, I took the RICE so seriously that now we're back out there because, you know, the healing process.
You had like instant RICE.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was about 2.5 weeks, which honestly was a pretty short process for getting back to full strength. So I was really proud of myself for actually following my own directions, you know?
Well, that's pretty good. Very good. We're proud of you too.
Thank you.
Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column, Moving Toward Health, is out every Tuesday. It's out on the paper, in the paper now, on the stands, or at scdemocratonline.com. I think there's a dash in there. I always forget.
Yeah.
Google it.
It'll come up.
All right. Thank you so much, Maggie. And thank you so much, Ted. We appreciate it. And again, support public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania with your donation now, 845-482-4141, or go to WJFFradio.org. We'll take a break. And when we come back, culture reporter Valerie Manzi. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Lauren Migaki. I'm a coordinating producer for NPR. A coordinating producer is someone who goes in the fields wherever there's a big news event happening and acts as event planner and scheduler and script proofreader. Often it just means you're the problem solver on the ground. So anything that the reporters need to do their job, you're kind of there to help with. You know, the beauty of it is that you get to support people who are telling people's stories that you can't get if you're not on the ground. Making sure that they have power strips and showers, things like that, it feels like you're part of this bigger team effort to help tell the story. I think it's so important to have eyes and ears on something as small as a school board vote to as large as a global conflict. There's a lot that goes into reporting a story that doesn't always get seen, but is crucial to doing the story, and we could not do that without listener donations.
Keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno, Radio Catskill, I think is the show on Radio Catskill. I'm here with Valerie Manzi. It's a cavalcade of stars this morning. We are moving folks in and out, left and right. Thank you so much for being here. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi back again today with some culture. We were just talking about the loads of culture reporting that you have for this week, and we have a couple to choose from. Which one should we talk about first, River Rep or Les Miserables? Which one? It's your choice.
Well, I would say Les Mis for the students.
Yeah, we previewed that yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. And I know they're looking forward to it, and this way they can link to it and have a listen.
All right. It's our spring fund drive.
It is.
We're asking for folks to call in now, especially because Franklin Trapp, speaking of theater, was here earlier this hour with a $250 challenge, and we've only got about $200 to go. We have about 15 minutes to meet that, so call 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. So what will inspire you? More theater. These are the kids from the Wallenpaupack High School?
Yes, that's right. They are really stretching their theatrical abilities by performing in such a complicated, mature musical as Les Mis. I mean, to have a young high school student perform lead is pretty big, and they should be applauded, and their teachers should be applauded as well for bringing them forward in this way. Another good example of community theater, community radio, and we take the time to engage teenagers here at Radio Catskill. I was going to say Chatskill.
I'm so into saying
welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Well, we're going
to
hear you say that now, because here's your conversation with the students at Wallenpaupack High School talking about their spring musical, Les Miserables.
Good morning, Allison Hoffman, and welcome to Radio Chatskill, along with your students who are performing in Les Mis, and that's Jake, Alex, Nathan, and Jordan we'll be speaking to. So I wanted to begin with you, Allison, as director. What made you choose Les Mis?
Several factors go into choosing the musical for the year. The first thing that I look at is what students we have and what their capabilities are. And this year in particular, we decided to choose Les Mis because it is the 20th anniversary of the first musical I ever directed here at Wallenpaupack.
Wow.
It just happened to be Les Mis. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
And you had students that were up for the task, which isn't an easy one.
Right. The entirety of Les Mis is sung, and we have very strong singers this year, so it was a good fit.
Good, good. So who do we have first up to talk to?
You guys are going to talk to Jake. He is playing Jean Valjean.
Okay. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Hi, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. So you have a pretty big role to fill.
Yeah. Yes, I do. Oh my gosh. It is quite the character that I need to portray. It is absolutely incredible. And it's quite challenging, to be honest.
There's a lot to that character.
He basically transforms and from like this prisoner, and then he works his way up to be like the mayor of this town under disguise, and it's just like the very stark difference between the beginning of the show and the end of the show is just remarkable in terms of like how much his character has grown.
Yes, it's a very powerful piece of work of literature and of theatrical merit, for sure. What are you finding the most challenging?
What I'm finding the most challenging is definitely the portrayal of the character. I feel most past shows I've portrayed something similar to who I am as a person.
Okay.
Whether that be like Pugsley from the Addams Family or and Nicely Nicely from Guys and Dolls. I just think like I have portrayed a lot of different comedic characters, and this is my first role as a very serious and dramatic character, which I have yet to experience. So it's really just it's just a whole different like type of work that I'm putting into this character.
Yes, but a lot of satisfaction ultimately will come of it, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so excited to perform it on the stage and everybody sees, like, for the first time, like a different, like a whole different person on the stage, apart from just being like a comedic character.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay, I guess we'll move on to Alex.
Hello.
Hi, Alex.
Hello.
And who are you portraying in Les Mis?
In Les Mis, I'm portraying Javert.
Oh, well.
Yes, ma'am.
That, and how is that going as a character to immerse yourself in?
Well, it's actually going quite well. He's a much different character than I've ever played because, like Jake said, we have done shows that require a lot of performing and like a comedic aspect.
Yes.
And I, for instance, I was Nathan Detroit in Guys and Dolls, and he was a much more like performing character. And to switch from that to a very stern cop who like thinks Jean Valjean is this devil.
Right.
It's a little difficult, but we're getting there.
Good. Well, again, you both are presented with a big challenge because to immerse in a character that you've got to dig into yourself to portray, yeah. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of like taking up past experiences to help with that. I actually wrote a monologue for each of my songs to get into more of a feeling of how Javert would feel in that situation based off of my feelings of a situation similar to that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Good for you. So you found a technique that's helpful to you in portraying the character. That's great.
Yes, ma'am. It was all thanks to our amazing director, Mrs. Hoffman.
I'm sure. You can't do it without a good director. That's for sure.
Absolutely not.
Yes. And you mentioned Guys and Dolls, and as a matter of fact, we just interviewed a number of students locally here from Sullivan West who are doing Guys and Dolls this month. And
really?
Yeah, and they were thrilled and happy and having a lot of fun and growing in the process, which is what it's all about.
Yes, ma'am. That's okay. Lovely to hear.
All right, Alex, thank you. And now we'll speak to Nathan.
All righty. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi.
And who are you portraying?
Well, so I'm the stage manager, so I don't actually act in the show.
Oh, okay, a stage manager. Well, you need a stage manager or nothing works. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Have you done this before?
So this is my first year stage managing. I did stage manage for the last show, but that was not a musical. So a lot more challenges come with that. But.
And what are you finding in terms of the learning experience?
It's just definitely leading a bunch of the crews, and just keeping everything in check and making sure I have everything known.
Yeah. So you've got to keep track of a lot of things.
Yeah.
A lot of organizational skills.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, and that's not always the easiest thing to do. You've got to
definitely.
And you have to keep other people organized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are you looking forward to sitting back and enjoying the show?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'm very excited for when it's second nature instead of learning something new every day.
And what is your experience with theater?
So I did act a while ago, back in middle school. And then I realized that being on stage wasn't for me. And then so I went backstage and started helping with the crews.
I love that you identified that at a young age and were able to make a choice that suited you. Quality to have. And we'll pass on to Jordan.
All right. Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Jordan. Hello, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. This has been fun interviewing all of you. And what is your role in the production of Les Mis?
So I play Madame Thénardier.
And tell us about her.
So she is the innkeeper's wife And her and the innkeeper are pretty much the comedic relief of the show because it's a pretty heavy show. There's a lot of serious topics, but whenever they come on stage, you know that you're going to be able to get a good laugh.
So the comic relief, an important factor for the audience.
Yes.
Are you having fun with it?
Yes, absolutely. I've been having such a fun time experimenting with different line deliveries and different ways to do an accent with it, the ways to make it the most appealing to the audience.
You can be a bit over the top.
Yes, definitely.
What other plays have you been in, or have you been in other plays?
Yes, I was in Save Hamlet, which is a comedy play this past fall. I was a part of Guys and Dolls and School of Rock and also Radium Girls, which is another play, not a musical.
Well, good for you. So you're really getting some experience under your belt.
Yes.
All righty. Well, I want to say I'm very impressed with all of you, and I'm wishing you really not to break a leg, but you know what I mean. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And back to the director for a moment.
Sure. Hello.
Hi. So let's recap and tell our listeners when, where, and how this is all going to happen.
Sure. The WAS Players, Wallenpaupack Area High School, presents Les Miserables April 11th at 7 p.m., 12th at 7 p.m., the 13th at 6 p.m., so an hour earlier, and the Sunday, the 14th at 2 p.m. matinee. It is at the Richard A. Porter Auditorium, which is in our high school in Hawley, PA.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you for the work you're doing because the students sound like they're really having a good time and they're learning and growing, and I thank you for that.
Oh, thank you so much. That's exactly what we strive to do.
Good. Oh, thank you again, all of you, for taking the time to share this with us.
Well, thanks for having us.
And that's culture reporter Valerie Manzi talking to the students and the teacher there at Wallenpaupack High School, their spring production of Les Miserables. Val, I have to tell you, you do such a great job bringing us all this great culture, but I really love it when you talk to the students and they're so enthusiastic. And
yes.
I feel like you get a kick out of it too.
I do get a kick out of it, and I'm always thrilled to talk to the teachers that I know invest a lot of time and energy in helping these students grow and develop. So it's a win-win.
It's a win-win. And speaking of win-win, Mimi is here from the office with a win-win. We made our challenge.
We did. Yay. Long-term listener, Andy from Calicoon, he's been listening for 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Called in and single-handedly closed that challenge from the Forsberg Playhouse. We are now at 22% of our goal. Let's get to 25.
Let's do it. I think we can. Thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
And thank you so much for everyone who's listening and who's donating and who's supporting public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Support the great reporting you just heard from Val Manzi and all the kids at Wallenpaupack High School. Maggie Fitzpatrick coming in with Moving Toward Health.
Yes.
You know, even Carter Walker from Vote B Pennsylvania keeping us apprised of all of the intricacies of the election in Pennsylvania and this election year. We're here to provide all of that to you. The news, information, entertainment. Support that with your donation during our spring fund drive. It's 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. I'll tell you, when you tune in, you never know what you're going to get on this Radio Chat Skill Show.
It takes a village.
It's fun. Well, thank you guys so much for being here, Valerie and Mimi.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you to Andy. Thank you to Anonymous. And thank you to everybody else who's donated so far. Again, let's get to that 25% goal by the day, if we can. Donate at WJFFradio.org. You can see that wheel of progress, and you can see what your donation will do, what impact you'll have, not on just that wheel, but on everybody that's listening right now. You'll keep public radio free and available to all here in our area, in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Donate to Radio Catskill during our spring fund drive, WJFFradio.org or 845-482-4141.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Marielle Segarra, host of Life Kit. Spring can be a great time for cleaning and reorganizing after you finally put your winter clothes away. It's also a perfect time to take stock of what's important to you, like the news and podcasts you rely on from this station. Help keep them going by making a gift today. Here's how to donate, and thank you.
Go to WJFFradio.org and support Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive. That's WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello.
Radio Catskill.
On air, online, on your smartphone, and on your smart speaker.
Public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.